Good evening, everyone. Thank you for being here with us. As you can see to my right, the seating order tonight was drawn at random, selected by each candidate prior to tonight's event at the Log Cabin. It is now my pleasure to introduce tonight's candidates. Representing the Conservative Party, Ryan Williams. Representing the Liberal Party, Chris Millett. Representing the Green Party, Erica Charlton. And representing the NDP, Kate Crothers. The order of responses is preset in an altering system to provide a balanced order of appearance. So the order for the rest of the debate will appear very random, if each candidate will have equal time rotation between each other's responses. Questions will be drawn by me on stage. We will not open the floor to live audience questions, and I will ask now the audience respect for each candidate. Heckling will not be tolerated, and you may be asked to leave. That's very serious. I will introduce each candidate's turn to speak. Please respect each candidate's turn by not interrupting. And that goes for the candidates as well. Candidates, if you have a rebuttal, please use your turn to make your point or save it for your closing statement. Interruptions will not be tolerated. Technicians will be signaled to shut off mics in this situation, although it's never happened. Talking tonight, Lisa Groves, our chamber staff, where are you, Lisa? Front center. Lisa will be holding placards to allow the people on stage to know their time. Green for 1 minute remaining, yellow for 15 seconds remaining, and red card for stop. Audience, when you see the red card, I would appreciate your applause. This is the friendliest way to help people know that their time is up. I will provide a warning if you continue to go past your time, signaling the technician to shut off the mic, but I don't intend to cut you off. We will begin this evening event with opening statements from each candidate. Each has 3 minutes for their opening statement. Timing is monitored by Lisa Grills. Please watch for her cards. Again, the audience is encouraged to applaud when the card is read. I would now like to invite Kate Crothers for her opening statement.
Thank you, everyone. It's a pleasure to be on this stage with the other candidates and to see such a strong turnout in the audience. I see this as a real testament to what this election means to us in the Bay of Quinte, a testament to the fact that our community is a community that cares. Care is what I have seen over the last 3 weeks on the campaign trail. Care for our neighbors, care for our children, care for our future. Care for everyday people, not billionaires and millionaires, but people who live here in the Bay of Quinte. People like you and I who have children who attend public school, who have small businesses that are directly affected by tariffs and the fear of tariffs, and people who have always looked out for one another. I decided to run for the NDP in this election for exactly this reason. I care because I see an increasingly volatile climate in the US and I fear for what it means to us here in Canada. I believe that in moments like these, we can either be complicit through voting for the same politics to bleed north across our border, be complicit in our silence by voting for the same government that has been in power until now, or you can do something different and stand up for yourself. So I stood up, and the NDP's plan for Canadians are the things I want to fight for. I want to see the aging community in our region have dental values visits that cost $7 instead of $150, an NDP initiative. I want to see the young parents in our community have daycare that costs $10 instead of $100. A day, another NDP initiative. I want eggs, milk, bread, and butter to be things that we lend our neighbors, not things that we hoard and can't afford. For those of you who have voted conservative or liberal for years because your parents and grandparents did, let me be loud and clear. The things that have put money in your pocket, the things that take care of you when you're sick and put food on your table, those are all NDP initiatives. Now, when I say you and I mean it. I was born in Campbellford, had my first job at the Quinte Mall. I went to Loyalist College. My mom was a lifelong teacher in this school board. I've raised my own children in Picton and launched my business. I shop at the No Frills, my kids go to PPAC, and I coach my daughter's soccer team. I am not a career politician, and I wasn't born with a silver spoon into a political family, but I have a lifetime of experience of listening to my community and acting for them.
I'd like to invite Erica Charlton for your opening statement.
Critical thinking Canadians are done with divisionary politics getting in the way of actual progressive legislation that might help us. We need leadership and unity. We need a goal and a plan. We have solutions, we just don't have anybody enacting them for us. Right now, more than ever, with the threats from our used-to-be neighbors to the south, we need to stand together and build strong communities. Canada's built on a foundation of small rural communities taking care of each other. What does that mean? That means working together throughout our differences to get the job done. And if you had a real job, you know that. Sometimes you don't have to align with the people that you work with to make work happen. And we need that from our government. Why are we experiencing so much infighting in our House of Commons instead of what we need to happen? Why, with so many people there, can they not work together? Some people comment about the Greens and only having two seats. But those seats work harder than everybody else, as I can tell, because they're willing to have conversations and they're willing to cross party lines to get things done. And we're not seeing that now. We're seeing fighting and bickering and name-calling and hate. There's so much hate. This isn't a team sport. We're not working against each other. We're supposed to be working with each other. We need everybody at the table. All colors make the rainbow. And differences in opinion garnish great ideas. And we can vote on great ideas, but not if we're just focusing on blaming each other for what's going on. Well, I'm going to blame people. I'm going to blame our leaders. Why is it that I'm here again, 3.5 years later, with Ryan, and we're going to talk about the housing crisis. And we're gonna talk about healthcare. These are conversations that should have been done by now. It should have been cut, dealt with, moving on, right? We need progress. There's a housing issue. There's an affordable living issue. So what the Green Party has done, and as we continue to do, we're gonna provide solutions. Having the biggest government housing building project for affordable housing that actually keeps affordable for the length of time that we need it. Declaring healthcare an emergency. We need to act as if the primary right for a doctor is a human right. When we make that kind of change, we'll be able to enact quickly to solve our problems, because that's what we have, problems that need solving. I'm from the county. I love it here, and that's why I stood up in this position, so that I can be great opposition and hold our reps accountable for not voting in favor of things that would actually help us. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica. By now, I'd like to invite Chris Millett for your opening statement. Chris, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chris. Some of you may know me from my 36-year career in local print journalism with the Intelligencer and later with the Metroland Weeklies, Belleville News, Pointe West News, and others. Some here may know me for what is now my second term as municipal councillor for the city of Belleville. But please know this, I'm all in right now as your Liberal candidate in this fight. I don't need to tell you we're in the most consequential elections of our lifetime, if not the most important election of our lifetime. And I am running to provide the best representation to each and every resident in Bay of Quinte riding. I'm proud to be part of Team Carney. Prime Minister Carney has shown to be a competent, strong leader and the right person to lead Canada during these turbulent and dangerous times. When canvassing across this riding, we've experienced the overwhelming confidence that residents are voicing in Prime Minister Carney and our policy. They've expressed to us the trust that they have in our Prime Minister to be the best qualified person to rise up to the unprecedented economic challenges and the protection of our sovereignty as repeatedly threatened by U.S. President Donald Trump. What we're tired too as a country from the constant barrage from the opposition telling us that our country is broken, that crime is rampant, and the refusal, frankly, for pure political gain to decry such acts as we saw right here in 1923 on Belleville's Market Square, where we experienced the most vile, violent threats and slurs hurled at former Prime Minister when visiting our Prime Minister Trudeau when visiting our city. What an embarrassment for all of us, especially watching such portrayal of Belleville on national news. My journalistic background has given me a breadth of knowledge and understanding of the Bay of Quinte like none other. Having had the utmost privilege to deploy with the men and women of our Air Force, the Royal Canadian Air Force, to strife and famine-torn nations like Somalia, Haiti, and Bosnia, all the vacation hotspots, as we like to call them, I can tell you I share the immense pride in seeing the respect and admiration shown to our maple leaf around the world and to those who serve under it. I believe none of us want to hear the opposition party politicians tearing down our great nation simply to win votes. I'm all in for this fight. I'm a Liberal candidate in this election to keep Canada strong and to continue to build the strongest free nation in the world under the unwavering leadership of Mark Carney. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chris, and I'm Ryan Williams. It's been my honor and a privilege to be in the great House of Commons, the House of the Common People, for the last 3.5 years. And what I saw there was what we have is a generational crossroads. It's been mentioned that this is the most important election in Canada's history, and I do not disagree. The promise of Canada was simple. Each generation worked hard and left the country better for the next. But that dream has been lost. For our parents and grandparents, Canada meant good jobs with fair pay, affordable homes, and safe neighborhoods under a strong border, under a strong flag of Canada. But after 10 years of this Liberal government, this is the reality. 20% of Belleville is using Gleaners Food Bank. The biggest increase is from people who are working. 1/3 of our residents are food insecure and have to make choices between meats and vegetables on their table. This government has a mandate, not many people know this, that you have to buy an expensive electric vehicle by 2035, and they do plan to impose more carbon taxes, this time on our industries, which the Quinte manufacturer said could affect 6,000 jobs in this region. Crime is rising fast. Since 2015, violent crime in Canada has risen by 50%, and here in Quinte, violent crime is 20% higher than the national average. Homelessness has doubled. Opiate addiction is rising. It's become an emergency. Drug dealers are back out in the streets the very next morning when they're taken in by our police. We are short over 50 doctors. ER wait times at BGH can exceed 8 hours, and many families are without a family doctor, and those with a doctor are afraid of losing them. We have a choice ahead in this election, why it's so important. We can keep down the dark path of Liberal government, or we can turn into the new horizon of a Conservative government for our next generation. Our plan for a better future is a Conservative government will make life more affordable with a 15% income tax cut across the board, saving the average worker $900 and the average family $1,800. We will keep the carbon tax forever, including the new industrial carbon tax being pushed by Mark Carney that threatens those jobs. We'll build homes, not bureaucracy.
never taking away your choice to choose what car you drive, whether it's a hybrid or gas or electric, that's best for your family. We'll put repeat violent offenders and drug traffickers behind bars. We will put jail, not bail, that our police have been asking for. We'll fund addiction treatment programs that actually help people recover. We'll launch the Blue Seal program, testing and accrediting internationally trained doctors. We have 10,000 of them in Canada. We're already here in Canada, but they're not working, so that we can get doctors now into our cities, for our hospitals, and for you. This is a generational election. That's about leaving the country better for our children. After 10 years of broken promises, higher costs, and growing chaos, ask yourself at the ballot box, is it time for change? Because I believe it is. I believe it's time for change. For change.
We'll now move into the second part of the evening, where candidates will be asked a series of questions. These questions are developed through community input submissions, federal and provincial chamber platform documents, and confirmed by the Government Affairs Committee of the Belleville Chamber of Commerce. Please note that submitted questions may not be quoted and or have been combined into general themes of concern and interest as relates to the federal government and their policy and decisions. There will be two parts to the Q&A portion. In part one, each candidate will have a chance to be the first to answer a question, and all candidates will have the opportunity to respond as well. Responses will be timed, and the speaker will be warned when they're reaching their limit. In this instance, first question will go to Ryan Williams. Ryan, in this section, you will have 2 minutes for your answer, and everyone else will have one, with the last rebuttal going to Ryan, who will also have 1 minute. I will now draw the first question. Topic is housing and affordability. Access to housing across the country, from subsidized rent to market value homeownership, continues to be top of mind for all Canadians. Amid this housing crisis, how will your party help increase supply at all levels in the Bay of Quinte region?
Thank you very much, Chris. And I'm glad for this question because I think it is the biggest issue we face in this region. I think it's the biggest issue we face in Canada. Housing's a crisis. We have the lowest amount of homes per capita of any nation in the G7. And the reality is last year alone, we built 220,000 homes, and the year prior we built 240,000. So actually our housing starts are decreasing while we brought in 1.4 million people. So we've announced a few things that we're gonna do for housing. Number one is to work with the provinces and municipalities to cut the bureaucracy. The biggest threat to home building is the people. We get in the way of housing construction and new starts. To start and to finish a housing project right now in Canada takes an average of 7 years, and that's the same thing in Quinte. When it comes to coming to planning and it comes to approving those housing, it's government and its regulations and its planning to get in the way. So we're going to do a couple things to kickstart that housing. Number one, we're going to make sure that we work with the provinces to eliminate a lot of the red tape that's in the way. Some of that's in the planning side, some of that's in the municipal side and the permitting side, but we're going to make sure that for every dollar that the municipality cuts in terms of development fees, this is one side of it, we're gonna match that for 50 cents. But the bigger part is we're gonna cut tax on new home construction. We're gonna cut all the GST, which will save $64,000 for a new home up to $1.3 million. That's not just for first-time home buyers, that's for any buyer. What that does is it moves people maybe in out of their existing house, and more importantly, it frees up inventory. But more importantly, Chris, what we're working on is affordable market rents and more transitional housing. I've been a big advocate for Gracian's Shiloh House, which is transitional house, which comes with wraparound supports and employment and social services. But more importantly, we need affordable market rent. We need about 5,000 rental units that are between 800 and 1,500. The best ones who do that in the region are Phil Spry and Bob Cottrell for Altogether Housing. We need to replicate what they do, which means helping them out.
Elected by Chris Millette. Chris, you have a 1 minute response.
Well, I'm happy to hear Ryan bring up the housing message, and Phil Spry and Altogether Housing. On Saturday, I was in Bloomfield visiting the people there who were behind these Pinecrest School project. You may or may not have heard of it. It's 58 affordable homes strictly for seniors with market rents. These are crazy market rents, $700 to $900 a month for a 1 to 2 bedroom apartment in an old school.
Springale, which is a group working with Phil Spry and Altogether Housing, have asked this group to spearhead that. They've in turn asked us what we can do at the federal level, but I can tell you right now it's custom fit for Mark Carney's announced new Liberal government to build more homes since the Second World War. We're creating the Build Canada Homes program to get government back in the business of home building. We will support Springale and all the other companies.
Thank you for your 1 minute response.
Thank you. Canada knows how to build good homes. We have the material. We have all the resources available to us. We just don't have the leadership to do it. We need to work between all three levels of government to resolve this issue quickly. Municipalities don't necessarily have the infrastructure to invoke great, quick acting housing plans, so we need provinces at the table to help with that discussion. We need federal funding to make affordable housing. And when we say it's affordable housing, we need to guarantee that it stays affordable housing. Thank you. Housing should not be more than 30% of your income. And if we're going to be building public houses, we have to have a covenant in place to make sure that those houses stay within that 30% range, median range for the area that's being built in. We have a plan to fix this. And when public money is invested in it, we need to make sure that it remains affordable. We need to close loopholes and eliminate tax advantages for corporations, and we need to stop corporations from buying houses in our market.
Kate, I'd like to invite you for your 1 minute rebuttal.
Thank you. Nobody is questioning the need for more houses. This is very clear. It is required in Bay of Quinte, it's required across Canada. The question is, who's going to build these houses? Right now, affordable housing isn't being built because it's not profitable for big developers. Rent control isn't offered because billionaires want to stay rich. The NDP is going to imply enforce rent control nationwide. We saw Doug Ford take that away from us in Ontario, and now people are struggling to meet their rent every day. We also need houses that are built for people like us, people who can't afford a big mansion. We need community housing, and we need to solve our housing crisis in Belleville.
Ryan, I would ask you for a 1 minute rebuttal to close out this round.
Thank you, Chris. Well, we're hearing that government's the answer. Actually, government is the problem. The government needs to get out of the way. When we talk about Pinecrest School, it's been so long since they started, it actually went under a name change. It was Love Song when a predecessor was there, Neil Ellis, and now it's Pinecrest. The last time they were waiting was a government grant for green funding, CIGB. We wrote letters to the ministers about this for solar panels to get affordable housing started. The government's been the problem. When it comes to the base, the CFP Trenton, it's been 10 years they promised to build the government 50 affordable housing units for the military. It's been 10 years and zero have been built. Get government out of the way. Let's get start building with people who build homes, not government. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Ryan. The second question I'll ask Chris to answer first. In this round, Chris, you will have 2 minutes while the remaining candidates will have one, and I will bring it back to you at the very end for a 1 minute rebuttal. Question is in regards to federal funding. How will your party ensure that federal transfer payments to provinces result in equitable funding for rural communities like the Bay of Quinte, where the cost of delivering services often exceed per capita models based on urban benchmarks? Chris, I invite you for a 2 minute response.
Could you just repeat the last bit of that question, please, Chris?
Absolutely. I'll read the question one more time for
Chris. Okay, sorry.
No. How will your party ensure that federal transfer payments to provinces result in equitable funding for rural communities like the Bay of Quinte, where the cost of delivering services often exceeds per capita models based on urban benchmarks?
Okay, yeah, and great question. And the answer, quite simply, is we have to be more assertive with our provincial partners in
how that funding is spent, because we can see it, for instance, in healthcare spending. We send healthcare transfers to the province of Ontario. We know that there's a $3 billion surplus, but they can't explain where federal funding went that was earmarked for our hospitals and our waiting rooms. We need to have more. We need to have more stronger, more enforced strings attached, if you will, for lack of a better term, on those funding allowances. The transfer payments have always been a nettlesome file for all of them. It's basically, because of the federal-provincial relationship, it's don't tell us how to spend our money, because as we all heard, or we hear repeatedly, there's only one taxpayer. You're basically giving us back our tax money. To enforce a stronger relationship, a Carney government has already spoken about the fact that we've got to have a better partnership and we've got to be more assertive with those our provincial partners in making sure that the money we send from Ottawa gets purpose-built for infrastructure, especially getting back to your specific question on things like what we greatly need here in Belleville. There's sewage pumping stations. We have a $100 million refit of the wastewater treatment facility. It's going to require huge dollars. We need to see that those federal dollars are adequately supplied and properly applied.
Hey, I would like to invite you for a one-minute response.
Thanks. This is a great question because I know I keep hearing as I move through the community about projects that could have received federal funding and they couldn't get it in Ottawa. The Queen Elizabeth School in Picton is one of them. The community had to figure out how to work together outside of federal funding to see that come to life. And look at Highway 49 in Picton, one of the worst highways in Ontario, maybe Canada. And that responsibility has been downloaded onto the community, and had the federal funding, their share has not come yet. So it would be up to us to enforce that, to work with the federal government and the provincial government and communities to make that happen.
Thank you, Kate. Erica, I'd like to invite you for a 1 minute response.
So it sounds like we need to change these models. There needs to be an update so that it's more equitable for everybody. And it also sounds like we need more accountability. Also, maybe I need to speak a little bit louder so you listen to me more. Is that what it is? If you talk over other candidates, I sound more important, right? No, it don't sound more important. We need accountability in our government. You just said that we have food insecurity. Why did you vote against our national school food program? If you know that we were... of poverty, then why are you voting against Affordability Act? So that for a basic livable income so that we can survive this change in our dynamic. I don't have anything to say more about that.
Ryan, I'd like to invite you for your 1 minute response.
Thank you, Chris. Well, it comes to one word, which is accountability, and it's something that's been lacking for the last at least a decade when it comes to the fact that it's your tax dollar and this government has not spent it wisely. We have 140,000 extra employees hired by the federal government, and yet we have food unaffordability in our schools. We have the problem where we have one-third of our residents not being able to eat. So we have these programs, and the government's solution, why we voted against it, it was for more bureaucracy, for more employees, when we actually need more meal programs, and more money to the programs that are already running here, doing that job. That's the whole point of this government, is to make sure that your money is accountable. When it comes to these provinces, we're going to tie taxpayer dollars to infrastructure, to homes actually built, not to employees. We're going to tie tax dollars to hospital beds and to doctors and to nurses who we need in this community right away. That's how we're going to take care of your tax dollars.
Thank you, Ryan. Chris, I'd like to invite you to close out this session with a 1 minute response.
Well, we're hearing about a need for a different approach to government and the relations with the provinces all on down to the municipalities.
But the Carney government is talking about a bold new fiscal approach that doesn't gut social services, such as billions of Pentagon. Daycare, that'll stay. PharmaCare, secure. Dental care, still here. No slashing and burning of what keeps us going, just smarter ways to fund it. Look, we're not talking about fixing up the old place by fixing a few boards on the fence, slapping a fresh coat of paint on the doors. We're building a new house with a smart, savvy, bold architect and builder, and we're going to change things in Ottawa starting today.
Thank you for your answers. In this round, Erica, you'll be the first to respond. You'll have 2 minutes, and you'll be able to round out at the end with a one-minute rebuttal to the other candidates. This kind of question surrounds community safety. Bail reform is often used as a public talking point discussions about crime and safety, but does not fully address the complexity of shifting crime patterns and social service gaps. What other reforms should we expect from the federal government to improve community safety?
If we want to improve our community safety, we need to address the foundational issues that are existing in our society that are causing us to be unsafe. We need access to healthcare, we need access to social services, we need access to housing. Crime is directly related to poverty, as I stated before. And who are our most impoverished right now? We have a huge portion, almost 40% of people accessing disability who are being subjected to legislative poverty. And from that, our crime is growing. We need access to daycare and public transportation. We need to lift our foundation up. We will need to take care of our mothers. You want to reduce crime, we need to have affordable housing, access to daycare, and transportation that is reliable so that we can keep the community working and we can keep engagement. Preventative health measures like dental care and access to mental health services also reduce crime. These are issues that cause people to leave the workforce. And when you leave the workforce, it's very hard to get back into the workforce. So if we want to enact legislation that's going to keep people behind bars for longer, fine. But let's prevent them from getting there in the first place. Let's give them education. Let's give them training. Let's give them opportunities that might not exist and that only exist for people who grew up in wealthy families. That the rest of us might not. I'm lucky in my upbringing because I did have access to services. And now in my position, I want to make sure that other people have access to those services as well. Belleville used to be a safe place. Picton is a great place. Trenton is a great place. We love it here. And if we want to reduce the insecurity that we feel when we're walking on the streets, we need to give people more options on how to take care of themselves.
Chris, I'd like to invite you for a 1 minute response.
Thank you very much, Chris. Crime is actually down, I should add, in Bell, if you look at the recent crime stats. Unfortunately, we've heard from the opposition, especially in the last couple days, the real hardcore lock 'em up, rah-rah sloganeering. It's specifically rage baiting. An example was when Mr. Poliev yesterday spoke to was asked by a global TV reporter to give an example of where mass murderers have actually been let back out on the street because Mr. Poliev came up with this crazy talk idea of invoking the notwithstanding clause to keep people in jail. Our Carney government will toughen the criminal code and make bail laws stricter for violent and organized crime, home invasions, car thefts, and human trafficking, including and especially for repeat offenders. You know, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Ryan, I'd like to invite you for a 1 minute response.
You know, once a year I make it a point to do a ride-along with our local police and Belleville Police. I've done that since I'm a Belleville counselor. It's really a great time to spend time with the officers. And I always request the midnight shift because you get to see what's really going on in the city. The officers are asking for help. They're demoralized. They're talking about not being able to do their job well. And what they need for that job are the tools to do their job well. And the tools for that are to ensure that the judges have in place the ability to put those that do wrong in jail, repeat violent offenders and those who are dealing and who are manufacturing drugs in this country. The chief of police gave me a story from one individual that they arrested last year who was actually out and about and arrested at one of our women's shelters and harassing the women. He'd been arrested 15 times. 15 times let out on bail. 15 times that he was allowed to get in a situation where he's harassing women and doing other heinous crimes. We have to get back to giving the tools for jail on bail.
So, yeah, I want to talk about the notwithstanding clause that Kaliev is talking about invoking. This should worry all of us. This is a gross abuse of power. What he is asking for is the word of the Supreme Court of Canada. We are seeing to the south of us what is happening when people in power start abusing the power that we have given them. Money to our police force is not the answer. People need to be taken care of in their communities. They need affordable housing. They need mental health services. They need addiction counseling. They need a living wage. These are the ways that we have been trying.
Erica, I'd like to invite you for a 1 minute response.
You can see the difference of opinions up here on how we're going to tackle this issue. And I want you to be clear about what that means and how they're voting in the future. Are we voting to keep Canadians, which disproportionately represent the Indigenous population, behind bars? Or are we going to make the changes necessary to help our people get the help that they need? They need help. This is not an issue. People are not born evil. They don't come out of wanting to make problems in the world. The crime is a result of the situation that they're in, for the most part. And inequitable societies create more crime. And as our society becomes more inequitable, we're just going to see more crimes. We need to fix the issues from the bottom up and not just shove people behind bars and call them not our problem anymore. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica, and thank you all for your responses. For the last question of this period, Kate, you will have the first opportunity to answer. You'll have 2 minutes, and then I will then come back to you at the end for a 1 minute response. This question is on trade and economic resilience. What is your party's plan to retain major employers and manufacturers and support business growth that is less dependent on U.S. trade in the Bay of Quinte, where proximity to the U.S. border has been a competitive advantage?
Trade and tariffs, the question that's on everybody's mind these days. I'm a small business owner in the community, and I'm feeling it, and everybody else I'm talking to is feeling it, and that's one of the reasons why I'm standing here on this stage. We need creative solutions to create more lines of trade within Canada and partners outside of the United States. The NDP is committed to working on making that happen. In the Bay of Quinte, we have a lot of manufacturing. It's possible that people will end up losing their jobs because of these tariffs, and we need to come up with better solutions and creative ideas to drive economic growth in this area. There are communities here working on that. The Quinte Film Council sees big potential in this region to drive opportunity and economic growth through filming. And we live in a resource-rich area with a lot of beautiful beaches and wineries, and we have a great tourism industry, and that growth will only continue. The NDP is also committed to taking care of the workers who are going to lose their jobs because of these tariffs. They're going to make EI happen faster. They're going to give more money to people so they can actually pay their mortgage with EI, and then they're going to extend the period. They're also going to work with unions to make sure they're being taken care of, and they
Eric, I'd like to invite you for a 1-minute response.
One thing that's great about being Canadian is that people love us. They love us internationally. We've made great friends everywhere we go, and this is an opportunity to cash in on those friendships that we've made. We need to expand our trade across international borders and move away from our system that we've had before that was based on having a great friend in the States to work with. I don't know if I can get this all in one answer, so I'm going to try real quick. We need to create a strategic reserve for our natural resources so that we can maintain jobs in those industries and also include Save Canada's bond in that so that people can invest in our future so we can ride the wave of these tariffs without having our costs go up. From there, let's just be clear, they want to take over us economically. The strength that we can gain from looking within to resolve this issue is going to come from investing in people. We need to invest in a national defense corps. We also need to invest in a natural, nationwide electricity grid so that we can support new innovative endeavors. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. Chris, I'd like to invite you for a 1-minute response.
Thank you, Chris. Listen, we didn't start this fight. But one thing's clear, in a fight we are, and we're in the fight with the craziest opponent we've ever seen. The orange menace, as we call him, is the most erratic politician, if not North America, parts of this, the world has seen in the last several decades. We're focused on what we can control. Mark Carney's response to these latest tariffs is to fight, to protect, and to build. We will change the EI system to allow faster support for workers who are affected by tariffs. What we have to be is we have to be fleet-footed enough to adapt. Mark Carney has already shown that he's ready to do that. He's working with premiers. He's already developed a relationship with Doug Ford, for crying out loud. I mean, it's an example of how Mark Carney can work with all of the premiers to find an equitable solution to deal with the orange menace. We're going to provide... Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Brian, I'd like to invite you for a 1-minute response.
Thank you. Doug Ford's surprising everyone these days. But here, the thing about this threat, you know, right now in Canada, is we have to make Canada more competitive. We're at a disadvantage where we've had higher taxes, we've had carbon taxes, and we've just simply stopped our industries from being developed. We are what the world wants. When I've been part of trade in the government, trade is where you have wealth. When you create and sell the things, we've got the best. We've got pipelines, we've got natural gas, we've got critical minerals, potash, aluminum, great food processing here in this region, fisheries. We don't grow bananas, we don't make coffee, but we have to make those. And for 10 years, we've kept those things in the ground. The value of that was stopped under this Liberal government was $660 billion. It was 100,000 jobs we stopped, but guess what? It would have been $40 billion a year into the government treasury. Things that would have helped Canadians. And when it comes to trade, we have to make these industries more competitive and not less. So we're gonna stop the carbon tax that Mark Carney's gonna put in our industry. We're gonna protect the jobs in Canada, and then we're gonna go fight trading partners like Southeast Asia who want our stuff. We're gonna make it happen.
Pass it back to you for a 1-minute response.
Yeah, we have what the world wants. We also have opportunity to use those products in our country, to invest in our communities, to improve our infrastructure, and to employ people here, right here in Belleville. If our government will invest in our communities, like the NDP, who is committing to building more houses, fixing our roads, expanding hospitals, then we can solve so many problems, including employment, investment, and, you know, make everything better. He's seeing the card and I'm like, oh, I gotta get it all in. I lose my train of thought.
Perfect. More questions. Thank you. That will conclude that round. Moving into our next round of questions. There will be 8 questions, and candidates will have 1 minute each to answer all 8 questions. Thanks to those who submitted questions online. Please note, the wording of the submitted questions may have been edited for time. If we don't hear your exact question, the topic may have already been covered in earlier questions. Question one. Ryan, you will be the first to answer this one. On skills, immigration, and labor market. What changes would your party make to improve immigration pathways and better align talent with labor market demands in communities like ours? Ryan, you have 1 minute.
Thank you, Chris. And before this election was called, I actually worked with Sandy Hibbard Ramsey here for the CIDA for Workforce Development. You know what's crazy about this region? We don't know where the skilled trades are today, but we don't know where they're going to be in 2 years. And so we started a workforce survey, and it's here to help Loyalist College. Loyalist College's value proposition is to train the vacant skilled positions and make sure that our domestic students and then our international students can come together to fill those labor quotas. And we have so many jobs that are coming up. We've just learned in the last few months, we have over 200 police positions coming up, over 400 positions in long-term care, over 1,500 advanced manufacturing positions. If we want our students and we want our labor force, we want our people to make more money, we have to get them the training to get into the programs to where to make money. You know what one of the greatest things is? Our skilled trades. And our skilled trades are something that we need in this region, not only to build homes, but also to make sure our workforce is strong to be competitive against the US or other nations. We're gonna do that if we get back in government. Thank you.
Chris, I invite you for a 1 minute response to that question as well.
Thank you. And one thing that was left off Ryan's response on that is where a conservative government stands on immigration. We've unfortunately seen that immigration has become somewhat, and it's not. I'm not accusing the government or the opposition of fomenting these racist policies, but they fuel them. So what I'm saying is when we as the Liberal government allowed foreign students into the country because the provinces were asking for the community colleges were asking for them, it became an issue of we had opened up the gates too much, and that again wasn't coming from the provincial or from the opposition, but it was, however, not debunked. Immigration is the foundation of Canada's fabric and our proud history. Immigration at the right pace and the right numbers to support the job we need. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Erica, I'd like to invite you for a moment of response.
Thank you, and thank you, Chris, for bringing up the fact that I almost lost the point of the question with the first response. So with immigration, we can approach this in two ways. What does immigration solve? Why do we have immigration? Well, we have a need for skilled employees. We have a need for skilled laborers in our market. And if we're not going to allow people to come into our country, we're not going to give them space to attract skilled laborers, then we need to grow our skilled laborers. First thing the Green Party is going to do is make education free. That'll allow people to transition. That'll allow people opportunities that they may never have had because they were afraid or unable to access the student debt required to get the jobs that they need. So if we break down that barrier, we'll be able to fill the holes in our economy that we need easily. We can send out requests and we can give people the opportunities that they may have never had before. Or we can bring them in. It's up to you. Thank you.
Yeah, I think this topic of immigration is a good time to talk about how people are immigrating to our country, skilled professionals, and they're not able to practice here in their profession. So the NDP, particularly doctors and healthcare workers, the NDP is going to make it easier for doctors to become certified in Canada to help our healthcare crisis and our doctor shortage.
Thank you, Katie. Question two. Chris, you will be the first to answer this type of round. This question's on information, transparency, and media literacy. We have more access to information than ever before, but between social media and AI, this is not always a reliable source of information. What media channels would you recommend that support the most accurate and balanced representation of current events?
CBC.
Thank you. Thank you for the prompt. And I'm going to go right to it. Our conservative friends would like nothing better than to skewer the CBC. Defund it, put it to the scrap heap. Somebody better tell Casey and Finnegan, because that's not such a good idea. Mark Carney has announced that a new liberal plan to protect our Canadian identity will actually strengthen the CBC and Radio Canada. Protecting our identity is a critical part of keeping Canada strong. Here's how the SSC will defund the CBC. We'll stand up and protect it. We're going to develop a governance plan with CBC Radio Canada to improve accountability, empower leadership, and streamline processes, tapping into the institution's innovative spirit. Don't tell me that the CBC is a government puppet agency. Listen, I was in the business long enough. I know it's not. It's a valuable asset.
Erica, I'd like to invite you for a 1 minute response.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and say that if you want to defund the CBC, then you cannot listen to CBC too.
Exactly.
Canada has an identity problem across the country. Our varying regions make it hard for us to agree on a lot of things because our experience is a lot different from region to region. The CBC unites us. We were all there for Gord. And we all benefit from it. What other program, if you're going to defund the CBC, has both of our official languages and 11 Indigenous languages? Where can we get that? And why is that important? We know it's important. That's why it's there. And if you're going to take that away from us, you're going to take away part of Canada's heart. It's something that we need in the darkest of times, especially with the crises that we're experiencing right now. The unity that the CBC gives us is incomparable.
Thank you, Erica. Wait, I'd like to ask if you're going to respond.
This is a really interesting question, and I believe it was posed as, what would I recommend as an unbiased news source? At this time, we have so many sources at our disposal. We have social media, we have the CBC, we have CNN, Fox News, we also have Al Jazeera. We have all of these news channels, and we are learning and realizing, while there's a genocide happening in Palestine, that we cannot trust anybody to report accurately. Our media is at the behest of the governments in power and corporations.
Yes.
Thank you. Ryan, we have 1 minute for a response.
Thank you. And to set the record straight, no one's getting rid of the CBC. We're getting rid of the government bloat, which is the CBC. Let me tell you just one number. The CBC generates $681 million a year in terms of revenue and subscriptions. $681 million. And then on top of that, it gets $1.2 billion of government spending at a time when we have people going hungry and people going homeless. What we're actually going to do with that is ensure that CBC can operate efficiently and to ensure that they, for their $681 million, can bring that back to a more efficient statement. We're not getting rid of CBC Canada, but the other thing we're going to do is to ensure locally, where we have County FM, Quinte News, Cool 100, who none of them are able to put their news, their school bus cancellations, their event on Facebook or on Meta or on IG. We're going to be able to get that back because we're going to reverse it.
Just a friendly reminder to those in the audience, to please refrain from speaking while the candidates are. Thank you. I understand. Next answer first will be Erica. questions on social support. What effort is required of the federal government to ensure people with disabilities and seniors have the financial support and security needed to thrive? We have 1 minute.
Thank you. Too many Canadians struggle to care for their families. We can't afford childcare without programs. And people are facing huge debts and high living costs. We need to create universal learning and childcare that everybody can afford. We need to expand paid leave to include elder care, miscarriages, and other family needs. We have dynamic families in Canada, and we need to be able to support them. And if you need to be able to leave the workforce to take care of your family, then we should be able to help you with that transition and with your transition back. Lastly, I'd say the most important thing we could do is enact a guaranteed livable income. Our economy is changing. Jobs are going to change. AI is coming in and taking over positions, and we need to be able to support people outside of that. If we're going to lose jobs, we need to.
Thank you for 1 minute.
Will you repeat?
What effort is required of the federal government to ensure people with disabilities and seniors have the financial support and security needed to thrive?
Well, the NDP is committed to increasing ODSP so that people who have disabilities or can't work can still afford their mortgages and pay their bills. We also have prioritizing long-term health care. I spent some time working as a paramedic, and I was in a lot of nursing homes. And what I saw there was not great, and that was 10 years ago, and it hasn't changed yet. We need to make sure that these homes are not for profit, they're for taking care of our seniors who are given to us.
Ryan, I'd like to invite you for a 1 minute response.
Thank you, Crystal. First, we have to take care of the basics. You know, when we talk to seniors, I'm knocking on the door. It's heartbreaking to see that they're putting 100% of their income into their rent, right? And to me, they can't find these apartments, can't afford to move. One lady was sleeping on her couch because her bed was flea infested. And she said, you know, I can't move out of here. So that's number one. Number two is food, where we see, again, using the food bank, but not able to make their ends meet. So going back to the basic means, we're taking care of the inflationary spending. We're making sure that they get more money in their pockets. And the third part is going to have to be, we're going to have to increase the OAS, we're going to have to increase disability and CIS as soon as we get more money in the bank. And the only way we're going to get more money in the bank in Canada is to develop our natural resources, make sure that we're getting more of our tax dollars in the system and helping our citizens. Seniors and people with disability are suffering right now. It is a crisis and we need to help them.
Thank you, Ryan. Chris?
Thanks, Chris. We had a great discussion the other day with the local CARP chapter, and I understand that my friend Ryan and others have spoken with them as well, and their concerns are much as you said. But a Carney government and a Liberal government is already working to deliver pharmacare, making vital medications more affordable for Canadians. And this goes for people with disabilities, because as we know, as was mentioned, ODSP and other support networks aren't keeping pace with some of the treatments that many people need and must have. The National Food Program will help more kids get the best start in life. A $1 billion program over 5 years. Hunger should not hinder potential. All of the PCs, including my friend on the stage here tonight, voted against it. They called it a slush fund. That program has lifted more children out of poverty than any federal program in recent memory.
Thank you, Chris. For question four, eight, you'll be the first one to respond. On military and national security, how has your party identified federal support for Canada's Department of National Defense and military readiness?
Well, military spending needs to be increased. The NDP is dedicated to making sure our armed forces are equipped to do the job that they need to do. They're also dedicated to making sure that military families have housing at their disposal. There is currently a housing crisis in the military family community as well. And we need to take care of our military if we're going to invest in our armed forces.
Ryan, I'd invite you for a 1 minute response.
Thank you, Chris. The first thing we're going to do is finish the 50 homes that were promised in 2015 in CFP Trenton so our military have a place to live. That's the first thing we're going to do. Second is we're going to meet our NATO targets home immediately. We've announced an Arctic base that we're going to start with 4,000 new Rangers. We're going to put more money into CFP Trenton. You know, the colonel told me they can't even close a hangar door right now. That's how disrepair. But he says he takes solace when he talks to the other bases around Canada because it's much worse everywhere else. We need to put money back into our military, make sure they have the equipment they need, and make sure that we meet our commitments with our NATO members. Most importantly, because when we're not at the NATO table, we haven't been in the trade table. When we find ourselves right now facing a trade crisis, not only with the Americans, we have to make sure we make new trading partners with Southeast Asia and other partners. That means investing in our military, playing our part when it comes to NATO and the world against Russia and China and other big threats. We're going to make sure we invest in our military, invest in their families, and invest in their equipment. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Ryan. Chris, I'd like to invite you for a 1 minute response.
Thank you. Well, many people don't know, but I have worked and I still work at CFP Trenton 8 Wing. I have a part-time job as a commissioner. I put on a handsome mall cop uniform a few times a week and go in and work at the air terminal there. And I see firsthand, and I speak to the corporals and the non-commissioned officers and the lower ranks on their challenges. I understand fully what they're facing. But a Mark Carney government will invest in the members of the Canadian Armed Forces. And this is being met with some, actually, great support by some of the people I work with, giving them a well-deserved raise, building on-base housing, improving access to doctors, mental health services, and child care, better supporting them and their families. That's the crux of what is needed there right now. Sure, some of the hangar doors don't close, but we've got some big investments coming with the new Airbus that has to be facilitated there. The armed forces are in need of an infusion of cash. Yes, we need to meet our NATO commitments. We will be first.
Thank you, Chris. Erica, I think that's for 1 minute.
Thank you. We need modern defense strategies for today's challenges. We need to strengthen our Arctic and coastal security through work with Indigenous communities. We need more patrols, we need better equipment. We need to build stronger cyber defenses and help stop foreign interference on our elections. We need to provide our armed forces with the capabilities they need for today's threats. And the Green Party wants to develop a National Defense Corps that is 120,000 strong group within Canada that not only can help secure our borders, but also help us in our reaction to climate disasters, floods, fires. We had 230,000 Canadians displaced by climate emergencies last year. We need a team. And that means more military strength and increasing our reserves by 20,000.
Thank you, Erica. Ryan, you'll be the first to answer question 5. The topic is on health, homelessness, and social supports. How will you work with provincial and municipal partners to address homelessness and the mental health crisis in our region? And how would your party support local initiatives like the bridge at Alhambra?
Thank you, Chris. Well, I'm going to start with supports as a whole, because I know it was mentioned. Our Conservative government will keep the daycare program. We're going to keep the dental care program. We're going to keep the farmer camp program, because people are hurting, Chris, and we need to make sure that we keep these programs running in Canada. When it comes to our homeless and our opioid addictions, we've launched a program that will give $250 million over 5 years, and Belleville would be one of the first recipients for that to ensure we get treatment to those addicted by opioids and to get them off that and get their loved ones home drug-free. That's very important in terms of what we're talking about. We talked already about the crime portion. You can't do it without getting the drug dealers and the producers off the grid, but you also have to make sure that we help those that are addicted and get them the treatment they need. So we're going to make sure we do both simultaneously. You know, right now in Ontario, the Toronto Star reported last year there were 49 homegrown fentanyl labs, and this year there's 99. If we don't get them shut down and we don't put those guys behind bars, we're in big trouble.
Thank you, Ryan. Erica, I invite you for a 1 minute response.
Can you repeat the question?
Yes. How will you work with provincial and municipal partners to address homelessness and mental health crisis in our region? And how would your party support local initiatives like the Bridge at Hawahombrun?
Okay. If we want to address our issues when it comes to drugs and homelessness, we need to, again, work on a foundational level to figure out why we're having this problem. Go back to poverty. Let's go back to access. If we want to take people off the streets, we can't just give them a house to move into. We need creative and alternative solutions to our healthcare and our housing, which includes supportive housing. Housing that allows people the opportunity to live independently with the supports that they need to make sure that they don't lose that house or home immediately after getting it, because they don't have the resources or the capabilities. We need to fix a disability tax credit and fully fund the Canadian Disability Credit to make sure that our most vulnerable people have the funds that they need to survive. And when people have access to mental health care, to dental care, to pharmacare, to get the help that they need, they're significantly less likely to fall.
Thank you, Erica. Kate, I'm ready for a 1 minute response.
So the question that was posed was, how do we help our vulnerable population? And I come and answered with increasing police spending. Once again, these vulnerable populations need housing. They need mental health support. They need addictions counseling. We do not need more police on the streets locking them up. We need to take care of the citizens of Belleville. This is a priority for every single one of us in this community. We don't do that with police spending.
Thank you, Dave. Chris, the final word for this question. You have 1 minute.
Thank you, and I'm proud to be an 11-year member of the Enrichment Center for Mental Health here in Belleville. And it's an agency that does incredible work in not only in helping the homeless and addictions issues with our most vulnerable. It also helps in transitional housing, and this is a crucial part of the formula. So I would like to see increased funding, including on topping up the $1 million that now the federal government has provided the city of Belleville for the ending homelessness stream, as it's called. That's going directly to the hub now. We need more funding going forward. I'd like to touch on Ryan's statement about their opioid treatment program. One thing that really caught my ear about that is that it's going to be results-based, and the funding for that is going to be results-based. That means anybody relapses in that program, by the way I read it, it's going to be based on if anybody relapses, funding gets cut. That's not a formula that we do.
Chris, I'm going to be coming back to you for the first round of this question. This is a Canadian Chamber of Commerce question. How will your party work to strengthen Canada's trade relationship with the United States while diversifying trade opportunities abroad?
Well, as we said, thanks for the softball question there, Chris. As we said earlier, we're going to control what we can control with the tariffs and dealing with the Americans. What's happened is every day we get up and the orange menace has decided he's going to throw another curve at us. So what we're going to do is strengthen our, and we've already seen within 2-3 days of Mark Carney taking office Prime Minister, we've started forging those relationships with Europe. We're going to build, we're going to, Listen, there's no getting around the fact that the United States is our most important trading partner, and we can't just shut them out of the equation. But what we can do is start forging better relationships with Scandinavian countries, with European countries, with Southern Pacific countries that are dying for partnerships with us. We're going to build those relationships, and we're going to do them at a pace that is going to make Canadians proud of a Mark Carney government. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. Hey, I'd invite you for a one-minute response.
How to work with a man who is completely unpredictable. It is clear that the United States can't leave the question entirely. It's the most convenient trading partner and our biggest. But I don't think we can position ourselves so we can work with Donald Trump. We need to come up with more creative solutions and new ideas to bring money to this area and to create trading partners worldwide. The NDP wants our governments to work together to make this happen. It's not a one-man effort. All of us need to be at the table to make sure everybody's interests are protected.
Ryan, I'd invite you for a one-minute response.
Thank you. Well, the way we're going to do it is to meet strength to strength, and if the U.S. don't want to work with us, we're going to work with Southeast Asia. Mark Carney's been the economic advisor for Justin Trudeau for the last 5 years, and in the last 5 years, and he said this week in Quebec, he's not going to be actually developing pipelines east and west. He won't be developing our natural gas. He said that in Quebec, and the problem with that is we had countries in Europe that wanted to trade with us. Germany came here hat in hand and said, we want your natural gas, and we said no. We said no to China. We said no to Japan. We said no to South Korea. And the problem, Chris, is we need a new prime minister and a new government who's going to say yes, who's going to develop pipelines east to west, who's going to put our natural resources into market, who's going to develop our natural gas, who will create thousands of jobs. And guess what? 35 U.S. states call us our number one trading partner. If they do not want to work with us, we will work with Asia. It's not Europe. Europe can't even trade with itself. It's going to have to be Asia. That's going to be a new prime minister, a new government, and a true minister to make sure that we they make that deal happen.
I'd like to give you an answer now without mentioning another party's downfall. The point is that we need to move forward. Canada is, Natural Resources Canada says that 6 of Canada's 34 critical minerals are prioritized for their distinct potential to spur economic growth. So we're in a position where our previous trading partner expected us to export raw minerals to them. They process those minerals and sell them back to us. Let's skip the middleman as much as possible. Let's process our own resources. Let's add value at every stage of production, giving us options to trade internationally better with our own resources. I mentioned earlier that we need to create a strategic national reserve to mitigate the worst of this tariff war that we're experiencing and create confidence in our system. But beyond that, we need to work together to make this happen. And creating division by fighting and not coming up with solutions and blaming other people isn't going to get us through. We need unity and we need leadership. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica. You're going to be right back up here again. So I think it's civility, integrity, and political conduct. Is there one issue you believe has the power to unite Canadians across party lines, and how would you work to build consensus around it?
Canadian identity is what we need right now. We need to work together. We need to come up with solutions to overcome the next hurdle that we're going to have, and it's going to get worse. It's not just the tariffs coming out of the States. We are dealing with national climate emergencies. We're dealing with displacement. We're dealing with issues that we have absolutely no control over. How do we get through those problems? By working together, by noticing that there are differences, and that is okay. It is okay to have a difference of opinion because it creates great ideas. If we're going to go forward in our politics, electoral reform would be great. You could have proportional representation. We don't have only 40% of our votes going to our elected representative who gets sent to Ottawa on our behalf. That's not appropriate. But what is appropriate is working across party lines for Canadians. And if you can't do that, then don't apply for this job, please.
Thank you, Chris. And I've been very fortunate to be in Ottawa, and actually I had a lot of issues that I championed that were across party lines, and that was in competition. Canadians spend the highest amount for cell phone bills on the whole planet. We have some of the highest fees in banking. Our grocery stores are there's only three Canadian-owned and two American, and we have only two airlines. And I was able to get a bill through the House of Commons in second reading on open banking. And open banking is making sure that you own your data and that you can save money on your banking. And it happened in the UK. And I had the support of the NDP, the Green, the Bloc, unfortunately not the Liberals. But at the end of the day, we had that support in Parliament. And that's, again, when you're there, you have to work across party lines. You have to make sure that we're looking after Canadians. And that issue alone is looking after Canadians' pocketbooks. That's what we're going to continue to do if we form government, to ensure your cell phone bills are halved, ensure you pay zero transactional and monthly fees at your bank with competition, making sure we have more grocery stores, more distribution, and making sure we have more competition in airlines so you can actually fly across Canada. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian. Chris, I invite you for a one-minute response.
Thank you. Well, civility and working across party lines and dialogue. On the doorsteps this past few weeks, we've been hearing an awful lot of people bringing that up. And there was one woman in Picton in particular, and she was a 35, 40-year-long teacher. And she said to me, Chris, she goes, if you get to Ottawa, would you promise me that you will help restore civility in that chamber? It's a disgrace. She's not wrong. She's not wrong. I think at this time, as in any other time in our recent history, we need to pull together all one org, and this is Canada. Canada together, Canada strong, Canada speaking with one voice. There's no time for division, no time for divisiveness, and there certainly is no time for incivility. Now is the time for Canadians to all pull together. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
So I think we all know what the issue is that is uniting Canadians right now, and that is our neighbor to the south. When I moved through the community, the first thing on everybody's mind is Trump, how much they hate the man, and how proud they are to be Canadian. The things that come up when people are asked, what does it mean to be Canadian? It's universal health care. The NDP brought you that. It's pharmacare. It's dental care. These are all things that the NDP has brought into government. The NDP is the party that represents Canadian values to its core.
Thank you, Kate. Kate will be answering this question first. Topic is net zero economy and clean energy. How will your party balance the need to address climate change while supporting energy affordability? 1 minute.
We need to start investing into clean resources. This is paramount to our future. The NDP is committed to doing that. They are also committed to making sure our houses are energy efficient so that we all stop paying extraordinary energy bills and it's better for the environment. They're also going to make electric cars more affordable so everybody has access to one, reducing carbon emissions.
Chris, I'd like to invite you for a 1 minute response.
Could you just please repeat the question?
Let me pick it up off the ground. How will your party balance the need to address climate change while supporting energy affordability?
Thank you. And as we've seen, one of the very first act that Mark Carty did was to remove the retail carbon taxes because it was a divisive issue that wasn't progressive. That doesn't mean that carbon pricing doesn't work and you can all carp all you like about it. Carbon pricing has been shown around the world to have been an effective tool. That doesn't mean we're going to use it as a bubble. We're certainly not going to use it to stifle industry. We need to work in partnership with the provinces, territories, and most importantly, and this hasn't come up at all today, Indigenous peoples on some of these projects. They are not to be forgotten partners in any of these initiatives. We've seen climate change that has run rampant. We have some parties in the House that ignore it altogether and find it a hindrance to progress, if you will. We have to work creatively, we have to work effectively, but we also have to protect energy efficiency and self-reliance, especially in light of the menace to the sun. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Erica, thank you for a one-minute response.
Thanks. I'm going to start with a little anecdote. I was really lucky in my previous work that my company invested a lot in our training. They invested in so much training to make sure that we were capable to handle issues as they came up. And I think that that's the direction that we need to go in Canada if we want to overcome some of our issues when it comes to energy. We need to make investments. We need to make investment in a national power grid so we can support better transmission of energy across the country to make it more accessible for people. While the world is moving to clean energy, and Canada is falling behind in that. Other countries are creating new jobs and new opportunities, and we're not seeing that kind of success. We need a nationwide retrofit program to make houses and buildings more energy efficient and cut costs to consumers. And we need to invest in research for innovation and technology and climate adaption, not only.
Thank you, Erica. Brian, you have 1 minute.
You know, it's funny, last week when we saw the Liberals doing videos and they're filling their tank with gas, saying, look at how much money we're saving you. You know, months after they kept saying, the more money is going in your pocket, everyone knows that's not the case. Look, our number one export to China, does anyone know what it is?
Coal.
We're shipping coal to China. They're burning that coal. They're opening about 2 plants a week, and India's the same. And the wind goes west to east. And you know why we have heat domes over BC? Because of that coal burning pollution. Yeah. Our answer is simple. We have clean LNG energy, and the world wants it. We have it in abundance, the second biggest supply in the whole planet. And if we produce it in abundance, it becomes quicker or cheaper, but at the same time, we get it out to our nations. The other thing, we're going to share that resource with our Indigenous people. They're going to get 10% of those resource projects' profits, and we're going to ensure that they also profit from that development. It's thousands of jobs, and the only reason we have it is because of the Liberal and NDP government. A mine or a well produced is right now 15 years in development. It's going to make us poor to get this government again. Let's make Canadians rich and help the planet.
Thank you, everyone. And thank you all for participating in the question portion of our debate. You have had equal time to present your party's position on a wide variety of topics and hopefully also confirm the issues that the Bay of Quinte riding residents are concerned about. The Chamber relies on its membership and our connection to the community to inform us of the challenges they face. We are a nonpartisan advocacy group and look forward to working with a successful candidate following the election. I will now invite the candidates to make their closing statements. Again, a random order was set up prior to the candidate's number selection. For your closing statements, you will have 2 minutes. I would like to invite Chris Millett for his closing statement. Chris?
Thanks, Chris. Listen, I'm probably an unlikely federal candidate. I'm built like a beer keg. I got face like 5 miles of bad road. But I'll tell you what I do have. I have hard drive and a deep understanding of the people of the Bay of Quinte. I want to thank you all tonight for coming out. And we're blessed to live in one of the greatest countries on the planet. Canada is one of the most admired, most progressive and prosperous countries in the world. Let's not forget that. We live in a time of immense challenges, however, And through that fire, we are forging an opportunity to build one of the strongest, most free and caring nations, which is bestowed with natural riches, resources, and a nation's story like no other. Under the leadership of Mark Carney, we'll face those challenges such as tariffs, housing, climate change, building new infrastructure, healthcare, and among others, rebuilding of our military. Now's not the time to tear it all down with three-word slogans and bumper sticker populist politics. Now's the time to rally around our maple leaf, to get our elbows up and support our leader, Mark Carney, to bring us through that tumult, stronger and with an unbreakable resolve to continue as one of the best places on earth in which to live, raise a family, and thrive. Thank you very much for your time.
Statement. Ryan?
So thank you, Chris, and thank you all of you for coming tonight. This is really important to have so many people interested in this debate, which we feel is going to be one of the most important votes of this country's history. This is about generational change. It's about really looking at all of our generations in Canada and saying truthfully, are we looking to leave the country better off to that generation than they have it now? After 10 years of broken promises, higher costs, and growing chaos, ask yourself one question, please, in the ballot box. Is it time for change? If you're struggling to make ends meet, I need you to get out and do one thing this election. Please vote. If you're the son or a daughter, if you have children or grandchildren who can't afford to move out of a house, I need you to get out and vote. If you've waited years to find a doctor or sick of the 8-hour-plus hospital lineups in our hospitals, I need you to get out and vote. If you want safe streets again, and please, with the tools and the police, put away repeat offenders, we need your vote. If you're tired of rising prices and rising government control, we need your vote. If you don't want to be told what kind of car to drive and your family and how much that's going to be, I want you to vote. If you want to half cell phone bills and not pay as much for cell phone, I want you to vote. If you never want to see the carbon tax again, I want you to vote. And if you believe Canada can be better, stronger, better, I want you to vote. Tell everyone you know to vote. This is a very important election. Vote for change and vote conservative. Thank you very much.
I'd like to start by thanking everyone for being here, for the excellent questions, for the chamber that has organized this opportunity for us to speak to the community. The questions you've asked and the responses you've heard from myself and the other candidates serve proof how important this election is to our community and how different the party stances are on issues that matter to you. I know that many of you are concerned about vote splitting or engaging in strategic voting. You're worried about a poly of government. Some of you have gone so far as to tell me to step down entirely. This is a dangerous precedent to set. Tommy Douglas had stepped down. You would be paying thousands of dollars for every ER trip when your kid has a fever and you don't know what to do. If Jack Layton had stepped down, our troops would have stayed in Afghanistan even longer, a war in which Canadians were collateral damage of American interests. So let me say this. To my incredible NDP community, the erasure of the left is not an option. I will not stand down, and neither should you. To my true blue conservative voters, take a look at the things that have actually made a difference in your life lately. Unless your annual paycheck has more than six figures in it, the money in your pocket is because of the NDP. If you voted blue your whole life, but you're worried about Trump, if you said elbows up or Canada is not for sale, or want to put Canada first, voting for the Conservatives this election will do exactly the opposite. Let me be clear. A vote for the Liberals is a vote for a right of center government. You will not get the same representation that you will if you vote for the NDP.
thank you for inviting me for your closing statement.
And thank you everybody for being here. I do want to comment, thank you Ryan for bringing forward the fact that you did get a bill passed. And you have effectively done as much work as your leader has done in 20 years. One great thing about the Green Party is that if it's great legislation, we don't care who passes it. What we want is for you to work for us and make things happen for us. And action breeds doubt and fear. Action breeds confidence and courage. If you want to conquer fear, do not sit at home and think about it. Go and get busy. That's Dale Carnegie. If we're going to apply that to now, apply it to us candidates up here, speaking on your behalf and holding our representatives accountable. And also to you, your inaction when voting is going to cause us issues in the future. So whatever I can ask, I don't care if you're not going to vote for me, that's fine. But go home and make sure that every person in your home votes, that everybody gets out there and votes for their leader. It doesn't matter. Another really great quote that has stuck with me from the years that I heard it, and if you know who said this, please let me know, and it's that, if you're gonna be Canadian, you gotta be tough. And it stuck with me for so long, because what does that mean? That means we're resilient. That means that we go forward every day and deal with our issues regardless of what they are. Canadians are hard workers. We are not lazy people. And that is why we have a flourishing middle class, because we're willing to make sacrifices for our neighbors to make sure that everybody succeeds and everybody has a chance. Canadians are proud of our identity. We're proud of our education. And that's one thing when you say, I'm not American, you can say, because I'm educated. And I have critical thinking skills. And our government forced us to read 1984, and because of that, we all have an opinion. And that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you to all of you candidates for being here tonight, for your commitment to not just being here, but your commitment to our community. So on behalf of myself and the Bubble Chamber of Commerce, thank you for participating tonight, and thank you to the crowd for being very welcome.